Yeah, I'm ready to start. Do you have the document?
Did you send me that?
Yeah, I sent it to you.
I don't see it.
Well, I sent it to our podcast thread.
Oh, sorry. I thought you were Skype sending it.
Oh, okay. No.
We're starting right now?
Yep.
Okay. So, some good response from the Operation Rainfall podcast.
Oh, good.
Yeah. It seems they were happy about it there, but they're much more happy about something that's happened since we put that podcast out.
Since before we put it out, actually, from what I understand.
Oh, yeah, a couple hours before we put it out, I was reading my Facebook, and the update was that an unnamed person, but someone who Operation Rainfall has decided is reliable, has said that there are plans for Xenoblade and The Last Story, that they're localized in NTSC format and I guess ready to be announced.
Interesting. So did they jump the gun, or were they effective, you think? And
if the report is true that they were already localized, I don't think they would have localized them since Operation Rainfall started.
That's a good point. Yeah, NTSC isn't Europe.
But the thing is, maybe it's the pessimist in me, but I'm not throwing my hat in the air yet, you know?
Right.
There's other games that have been localized. Gift Pia, if you remember that, for the GameCube.
I do. I have a Japanese copy, as a matter of fact.
Wonderful game. But probably. I can't read all of it.
Yeah.
did like the parts I could understand, though. But like that was shown off in English at one of the conferences.
Okay.
I don't know if it was fully translated, but it was pretty close. Disaster Day of Crisis, NTSC, English version, done, ready, just not shipped.
Wow.
Because of the European sales. And that's what I'm worried about here. They might hold it off and see, well, how does it sell in Europe? It didn't sell that great.
Yeah.
Let's not.
Well, hopefully that won't be the case with Operation Rainfall, you know, making their case for European gamers to help support it so that we can get it here.
I wonder how many copies a game needs to sell to turn a profit. You know, like when a game's already done.
Has it already been like released in one market, made its money there? Yeah.
You know, if a game needed to be translated, you know, that's money there.
Right.
But, I mean, I wonder how much a game really needs to sell to make a profit. Because you've got, like, these small companies releasing, you know, crapware. SpongeBob SquarePants Yoga or something. I don't know. I just made that one up, but that's a great idea. But, but like, you know, that doesn't sell a lot of copies. And they sell it for, like, $20, too, you know? So if Nintendo was going all out in advertising these games, then they'd probably have to sell a lot. But what if they did like a stealth release?
Well, you know, it'd be hard to be stealthy now with so much attention on it.
I suppose. But like, remember how the fans were clamoring for Electroplankton and Nintendo finally gave in and released it, but just at one store, like the Nintendo World Store or online?
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Didn't most people import Electroplankton?
Yeah, because you don't really need any Japanese for it. But and that's the thing, too. Like, I mean, importing in the first place was always really easy with a Nintendo DS because there's no locks. There's no anybody can import. That's why Oendan was the most. Yeah. I've heard it said that it's the most imported game ever.
I believe it. I mean,
that still only equates to a few thousand copies, but like that, you know, that's enough to be the most imported game ever. You know.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
If anybody doesn't know, this is a rhythm game. It came out in America as Elite Beat Agents, heavily changed.
Well, yeah. It wasn't really the same game at all. I wouldn't even call it a localization. It's basically a new game.
Well, yeah. The same gameplay style, and it was made by the original developers, but it was made specifically for the Western audience.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think that's one of the problems. It was a Japanese company who had made a really great, quirky Japanese game, and then they were told, okay, make it an American game, but they're still Japanese. You know what I mean?
Right. Like the Oendan have like a cultural tick that people can relate to, but they had to make up some fictional Elite Beat Agents agency for these guys to come in. They didn't think of some kind of equivalent. I mean, you know, we have cheerleaders and they're, you know, yep, hot girls, for instance. But the Owen Don are male.
Yep.
So there's but they had female characters in the second game, right?
Spoilers. Okay, no, in the first game too. if you did well enough.
Oh, it was the first game. Sorry, yeah, there was a second team in the second game. Oh dear. Yeah. Well, I've yeah, but yeah.
Anyone who is planning to now it's not going to be the best selling import ever.
So yeah, like why is this whole thing with Operation Rainfall even a problem?
Well, that's the thing. Whereas portable video game systems have, for the most part, had a great record of being region-free, mm-hmm, it's the console brethren have not.
Right. And these days is mostly software. Part of it's, you know, the prevalence of DRM. Part of it's the existence of DVDs, which sort of codified a region-locking scheme.
Yeah.
And now the games are on discs. DVDs are better now. It's sort of come along. But before that were these little things called cartridges, which are more or less what handhelds use.
I've heard of these.
Yes, yes. Physical, you know, solid-state media that you plug in and actually completes a circuit with what you're doing. So I suppose it was possible.
It seems such a primitive idea now. You know what I mean?
Isn't it, though? Original video games didn't have cartridges. They just had the software built into the circuit boards. And then it's like a small step to say, well, what if we can change out the circuit boards or at least part of it?
Yeah, it'd be like, oh, I want to play Crysis, but my computer's not good enough. And you buy the Crysis box, and inside is a graphic card and RAM. And you just plug that into your computer.
Right, exactly. yeah, that wouldn't fly. But, like, you know, consoles for a really long time did this for, you know, 20, 30 years. So.
Yeah, and some games even had, like, upgrades to the system in, like, VR racing for the Sega Genesis.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like a polygon making graphics chip right in the cartridge. It was an oversized cartridge.
Yep.
That's great. Or the Super V... what was it called? The Super FX chip in Star Fox. Yeah.
Star Fox and... what was it, like Stunt Race or something?
FX.
Yep, Stunt Race FX. And the canceled... The almost completed but canceled Star Fox 2.
Yep.
Yep.
That's another topic altogether. But... but the thing is, so games used to come on cartridges, and for the early days, you know, there was some reason for making them incompatible by regions. You want to talk about that a bit?
Well, yeah, we actually have an episode of the first season of the Famicom Dojo show, which talks about this a little bit, and it wasn't really intentionally region locking. Part of what had happened, to summarize, is that when the NES came out in the States, they wanted to do some feature ads, like piping the extra sound channel through a single peripheral as opposed to, you know, being able to do it on every single cartridge. But since that peripheral never came out in the States, we have these extra pins that don't do a whole lot and remove the sound expansion from the cartridge itself. So we explain it in detail in the show, so I won't repeat myself, and, you know, people will watch the video.
Episode four,
cartridges and pins. It'll blow your mind, I promise, with our demonstrations. But, I mean, you know, apart from these pin changes, you get a converter, and your Famicom games will work just fine in NES.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, there's no software modification. The lockout is entirely pin configuration.
Right, right.
Although I don't know. I mean, maybe we're painting Nintendo in too nice of a light. I mean, there's probably. I mean, if they really wanted to make it work, they probably could have. You know,
but
there was no. I mean, there was no import market at the time.
Exactly. Like, I didn't even know that. Japan is where the Nintendo came from and the games until I was much older, for instance. So
yeah,
definitely. One thing that could be considered a lockout is that 10 NES chip, but that was more for preventing unauthorized cartridges from being released, and that was their entire control scheme on preventing the NES from dying the same death as the Atari, which is why this chip isn't even present in the Famicom.
Yep. Yep.
No.
And I mean, there were tons of Famicom clones, but I think that the Famicom in the end did okay.
I've heard this.
yeah. So let's move ahead to the Super Famicom, which has the same pinout.
Yep. Both cartridges on both sides of the ocean. Actually, in Europe too, I think, have the same number of pins in the same order. And
so games are fully compatible?
Well, there's a couple of barriers. Again, going back to the 10 NES.
Good word, because literally there's a couple of barriers.
Oh, good point. I didn't think about that. Again, there's another lockout chip, but it's less for piracy or even region encoding as much as the video encoding. So, you know, Europe has PAL. Japan and U.S. have very similar NTSC standards. So Japan and U.S. have that same chip. Europe has PAL. And so those two aren't cross-compatible. However, Japan and the U.S. are. However, again...
There's a lot of howevers in that sentence. Okay.
Right. So many howevers. A Japanese cartridge will fit into a Super Nintendo, but it will not go down all the way because of a couple of barriers.
Yeah, and those barriers were two plastic tabs in the American system. Now, the American cartridges had two notches, so that those barriers, those tabs, didn't interfere with the cartridge going in, whereas the Japanese cartridges were not notched, so you... It would actually physically block it from making contact with the connectors.
Mm-hmm.
We're gonna do a video about this so you can actually see it in a little more detail. But what you should take from this is that take from this. There it goes again. Because the way to get rid of those barriers is to take them from the system.
Exactly.
You can do this. You can do this with a needle-nosed pliers. You just break those tabs off, pull them out. I mean, you could take the system apart and like remove them in a better way, but I just broke them off.
Or be a bit neater. You can like use a Dremel as well.
Yeah, exactly.
So very low tech solution for a very low tech lockout, and it was deliberate this time.
I met one person at a classic gaming show that didn't want to modify his system, and he actually modified the cartridges. He notched the cartridges.
That's ridiculous.
To me, that's like cutting your head off because of a bad haircut, but you know, but I mean, to each their own,
right.
I think it's much easier to get like two video game systems though than to mess up all your cartridges,
but. Right? Well, I mean, you know, how's that work going the other way? Because you can play Super NES titles on a Super Famicom, but the problem there is that the cartridge slot has a bevel on the front edge, and all the cartridges for the Super Famicom are built that way, but you literally cannot get your Super Nintendo cartridges in there without the aid of an adapter or maybe taking the top half of the system off or something.
Yeah. But these adapters, were really easy to get, too.
Yeah. It's just a pass-through, too. It's not like a big...
Exactly. Yeah. Nintendo 64, simple adapter.
Yeah, same deal, just a couple of notches in the way. Harder to remove, so you might want to actually get in there and remove the plastic shell around the bottom there, but same kind of deal. But that was the last cartridge system that Nintendo, or I think really anyone, released for a home console. Let me think.
I mean, there still are cartridge systems, of course. Kinda.
Well,
let's get into that in a minute.
Sure.
Tell me about the Master System.
Okay, yeah, so Sega's a bit different. Sega, for similar reasons to the NES versus the Famicom, the Master System in the U.S. had a different pin configuration, but that's partly because the only reason that the Master System and Mark III in Japan have that pinout is to be backwards compatible with the entire SG-1000 series, which we detail in our episode called the Sega Family Tree Special. To catch us up to all of our 8-bit Sega goodness to go into the 16-bit stuff we did for Season 2. But there is a workaround for this, at least with the U.S. Master System games going to the Japanese Master System.
It doesn't work the other way around, though, yeah.
Yeah, there's an expansion port on the bottom, like the bottom right of the Japanese Master System, and you can solder together like a little converter or something. I'm not really clear on all the details, but if you check out Mexican Waluigi's Let's Rip It a new one about this, you can see some pretty specific details. The other cool thing, very similar to the NES versus the Famicom, is that the Japanese Famicom, or sorry, the Japanese Master System has a sound FM synthesis chip inside of it. That's an add-on for the Mark III, but it's built into the Japanese system. And all the U.S. games that had expanded sound in Japan also have that built into the U.S. cartridges, but there was never anything released in the U.S. So you can hear the expanded sound when you use this expansion port.
Some of the U.S. developed games, like licensed titles and things, might not have had that, but
right.
But like the ports from Japanese systems, yeah, they all had that.
Yeah, and again, if you watch Mexican Wild Luigi's video, you can see some of the games that had that feature. It's just crazy to me.
Let's link that to our show notes.
Definitely. Yep, this will all be in our show notes, and it's just weird to me how like Nintendo and Sega have so many parallels in their 8-bit history, especially not having known their 8-bit history much before working on this show.
You know, they were rivals just because they had so much in common. You know, secretly they
and then they had a small chat. Never mind.
Anyway,
in jokes. Going on to 16-bit. Again, like the Super Nintendo and Super Famicom, the Genesis and Mega Drive have compatible pinouts, but again, there's physical barriers to get the cartridges into the U.S. systems. I learned from Jewario, more name dropping. This is going to be like a very shout out heavy show. I went to Magfest and attended his panel.
Okay,
which they actually made everyone leave the room for first, because I was actually in the panel before that, just so I made sure I had a good seat for his. But didn't work out that way. I had to come back in and sit on the floor with a bunch of people I didn't know. It was very scary. Hold me.
Weird.
But he told me something I didn't know. Told everyone something. Maybe they knew, but I didn't. That the Genesis 3 is actually wide enough to accommodate Mega Drive cartridges. And I have a Mega Drive cartridge here, and I tried it out, and sure enough.
Yep.
Yeah. That's something I'm sure we're also going to demonstrate in the future video as well. But definitely. It's very interesting. So there are options if you're still interested in importing retro games. Not so much for more modern stuff.
I think that it was just the companies at the time didn't really think it was going to be a problem.
Right.
They must have been like, you know, if someone really can speak this language and goes through all the trouble of coming to this country or like writing to someone here and getting the game and buying the converter, let them. You know?
Right.
It wasn't something that they actively tried to stop.
Oh God, what's their excuse now then?
Well, okay. We'll get to that.
Yeah.
We'll get to that. We should mention briefly the PC Engine.
Oh yeah.
The pins were in a different order.
Yep.
So you needed an adapter, but they'd work.
It's rumored that this was because they were afraid that Japanese games would be too hard and American gamers would be turned off. I don't know if I believe that at all.
The thing is, the PC Engine, the cards were like that, but all of the CD games, we're opening up a new can of worms here, starting with CD games, but all their CD games were region free.
Yeah, I found that out, because I don't have a Turbo CD, I only have the PC Engine. I have two different kinds of PC Engine CDs, actually. And I bought this Sherlock Holmes game. At Magfest, and you know, just on the wing and a prayer that it would work, and I went home and I did it on the new Super CD 2 that you had just sent to me, had just arrived, and it worked beautifully. So,
oh yeah, a lot of those titles had English built into them too.
Yeah, it's wild.
Like what is it? J.B. Harold's Murder Club.
I don't know.
Okay, it's like an adventure game, and it had English built right into it. A lot of other titles. Oh, here's something interesting. Since the cartridges were kind of region locked,
sure,
and since the Nintendo had crazy licensing blocking a lot of companies from releasing games on the PC Engine in America, which we talk about in our PC Engine angry PC Engine nerd episode of the show. Sorry.
Yes.
But this is something we didn't mention in the show. Companies like Tecmo were unable to release their PC Engine games in America, or at least not enough of them. One of the games they didn't release in America for the PC Engine was Ninja Gaiden, Ninja Gaiden. Oh, no, not this again.
Gaiden.
Ninja Gaiden, sorry. This one bothers me. But it never got released in America.
Okay,
the PC Engine version of it, so which would be the TurboGrafx version.
Sure.
But if you hold down a couple buttons when you're booting the game up, all of the English is built into it.
Oh, no way.
All the cutscenes are in English. All the stuff is in English.
Oh, I have to track this down now.
Yeah, I've got a copy. I can send over to you. But sweet. I don't know if it was something like they had intended to release it in the other region and it just didn't happen, or they were like, stupid Nintendo. we'll sell more copies of this if we put English in it, because people want this game, because it is the nicest version of the nicest, you know, of that generation home console version of it, I think. So it looks a lot better than the Nintendo version.
So what about Sega CD?
Sega CDs are region locked.
Are they? Oh, interesting. Yep.
They are.
How do they accommodate that? Because it's just a regular disc.
Wait a minute. CD, hold right? on. I might be wrong on there. Hold on. No. They're region locked.
Wow.
Well, let me think. That might be the first CD based region lock.
Right. Because I know. Saturn stuff. Well, some Saturn games work. It's kind of hit or miss.
Really?
Yeah. I only have the white Saturn. I'm gonna start singing the Sega to Sanshiro song, but yeah. So I bought a bunch of games in like 2003, brought those back over, and I started grabbing Sega Saturn games, U.S. Sega Saturn games, from the local shops around here, and you know it was just for fun because I knew I couldn't play a lot of them. But then just for the hell of it, I tried it, and some of them worked. They're really terrible titles that I never would want to play.
Are you sure you didn't have like one of the memory cards in that it's also an ST key?
Yeah. I'm sure because that's one of the ways you get around the region locking. The other one's to install a switch, which
that's crazy.
I've never done.
Really?
Yeah.
I've never heard that. Okay. Guys, go ahead, write in. If Sean's off his rocker here, tell us.
I can demonstrate this. I will make a video. If someone says, "Hey, Sean, you're crazy. This doesn't work," I will make a Denshi mail and prove you wrong.
Well, then again, I've never tried it. You know, because I mean, I know that it doesn't work for playing Japanese games on an American system. But to tell you the truth, I've never tried it the other way. So,
well, part of it was I think I had a bunch of a bag of like games and stuff you left me that I tried it on first.
Huh.
Is what that was. So,
that's totally crazy. Anyway.
Yeah.
Getting back to it. Yeah. Sega CD was region locked. CDI has no region locks because there were no regions. Because it didn't come out in Japan. So.
Oh, but it would have if the deal between Nintendo and Philips had gone through. But
I'd like now to plug an upcoming episode. So if you're listening to this podcast, I don't know, if you got into this podcast about 2 years into it or whatever, and you're listening to old episodes now, please check out our episode on the CDI that we haven't made yet, but will by the time you listen to it.
Right.
Okay, how's that?
Well, yeah, unless we change the name between now and then, it should be called the Nintendo PlayStation.
Ooh, perhaps. that sounds like a good title. Anyway.
Yes.
Well,
another thing about that too is that Nintendo and its CD based systems was trying to do region locking. It was trying to do it in a very interesting way, which we'll save for the episode. But it was bat, you know what, crazy.
Yeah.
If you ask me.
I mean, but that's been a way to prevent people from getting games too, is by not releasing certain hardware outside of the country.
Yeah, well, there you go.
WonderSwan is region locked to Japan because there's no WonderSwan anywhere else.
True.
The PCFX, which was released as a follow-up to the PC Engine, locked in that same way. going back farther, the Famicom Disk System.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
yep.
Or the Nintendo 64 DD, which was region locked by the fact that they only made six of them or something.
I was surprised they released it at all after how long it took to even get it out, you know?
Pretty region locked even for Japan because no one could get one. Well, you know what? Let me put it this way. I think anybody who wanted one could get one.
You know, I'm still looking for one, by the way. I have
anybody wanted one.
I have 64 DD games that I picked up last time I was in Tokyo, but
yeah.
I don't have a 64 DD to play it on. So
we'll have to get you one because I think that would be an episode people would want to watch.
Oh yeah,
it's 64 DD. In case you didn't grow up wanting one desperately in the early 90s. Was going to be the expansion for the Nintendo 64 that would basically work like a Nintendo disk system with these 64 meg cartridges that look a lot like zip disks, actually.
Yeah, quite a bit. I actually wrote into IGN so many times ranting about this very subject. Like, why didn't Nintendo build this into the console in the first place if they wanted to become, you know, a more versatile storage medium and compete with CDs and blah, 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 blah.
Exactly.
So I was that guy back in 1998.
You're still that guy. Sorry. Anyway, other cartridge systems. NSNK, they went region lock. Dude, if you're buying like a $400 cartridge, we don't care where you're buying it from. We're making money. Right. So no region locks there. However, they did have a different pinout between their home system and their arcade system.
Right.
That was just because the arcade games would sell for a higher price initially because they wanted, you know, coin operate, those machines cost more in general.
Right.
But they drop in price like crazy fast. Like when new games came out, like for example, Metal Slug on home cartridge format, like runs for like, oh, I don't know. It can go for like $2,000.
Oh, God, still?
Yeah, well, it's because they didn't make many because SNK pretty much figured they were done then. Of course, they continued releasing games for another like 7-8 years after that. But, they didn't anticipate the hit it would be. But you can get the arcade version of that right now for about $40.
Yeah, see? Much better.
Just because not many people are still, you know, using it in the arcade and operators, you know, put it on eBay, Craigslist, stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway, there was a region lock there, but they were one of the few companies not to put a region lock on their CD system.
Right, right.
And what's weird is every single CD game, at least every single CD game that was released in both regions, has both languages on them.
Oh, very cool.
You just change it. If you put a Japanese game on an American system, it's in English.
Mm-hmm.
If you put a Japanese game on a Korean system, it's in Korean.
Oh, so does it actually?
Were there Korean systems? To tell you the truth, I'm not sure. Korean is an option in a lot of games. For some reason, it changes the name of Samurai Showdown 2 to Fighter's Swords, which is bizarre to me. But anyway,
wasn't it also called something different in the U.S. like Samurai? No, am I wrong?
Samurai Showdown in the U.S., Samurai Spirits in Japan.
Thank you. Yes, that's what I was thinking of.
The Bandai Palladia was region locked in the fact that it didn't come out anywhere else.
Hey, what's wrong with the Palladia?
Hey, if you want to see what's wrong with the Palladia, please watch episode Angry PC Engine Nerds. The Pippin are region free.
What is a Pippin?
Pippin is the system released by Bandai and Apple Computers.
No.
It's got a PowerPC processor, and it had a lot of Gundam and Dragon Ball type games on it.
That's crazy. Because
Bandai made most of the software for it.
Right, right.
Yes, yes, yes. Apple's first unsuccessful attempt at releasing a home console.
Wow.
It was released in America. It was released in Japan. I say that there's no region coding, but it's unconfirmed because we've never found anybody who's had two of them. Right. So I'll list that as unconfirmed. If you can confirm or let us know. But as with most computer software, they were released on CD regular CD-ROMs. The only thing that might be a problem would be characters, like if they didn't have the Japanese character set built in, there'd be a lot of gibberish displayed. The 3DO, totally region, except for like 5 or 6 games which use this enhanced kanji set or something that wouldn't work on the American system because it didn't have that built in.
Okay.
Laser Active games are region locked.
Oh, interesting.
Yep. But if you have the expansion pack thingy, you can run the Japanese PC Engine CD games on a on an American Laser Active because there's no lock on that software. Okay. Atari Jaguar and Lynx, they are not region locked because they only made one version of the hardware.
Oh, that is really?
The Jaguar and Lynx were sold in Japan in very limited quantities, but all it was an American system with Japanese stickers put on the box.
Oh, interesting. Oh, wow.
Even the same box. You
so
know?
It wasn't even they sold just, in Europe then?
I don't know if it was.
Because of the video game compatibility, I would think.
That would be a problem, yes. But if anybody knows, let us know. Casio Loopy, Japan only.
Right.
Just thought I'd get that in there for the couple Loopy fans. Okay, we've covered those early generations, but it was like the Sega Saturn PlayStation era that people finally started putting codes in to the software.
Right.
That's when it started getting messy.
To say the least.
Did you ever know you could circumvent an early PlayStation's region code by, like, with a paperclip? But you'd have to play with, like, the lid open on the system?
Yeah, yep. I was aware of this. Yeah, that was one of a few methods. There was something else you could plug into the expansion port, too, wasn't there?
Yep. They made something like that. But, I mean, that's... I love the ways of modding a system that don't require actually buying anything. That's
right, the paperclip is like, here you go, buy a box of these. You only need one or two. Like, maybe three, I mean, if you don't do it right.
Just the crazy thing that you'd have to play the system with the lid open. I mean, that just...
Right. But then they started cracking down on that with...
Yeah, with the revisions.
Yeah. And the PS2, similarly, like, you know...
Exactly. I don't know what it was exactly that prompted everyone to start putting region codes in. I mean, but then again, let's look at the systems that didn't have region codes on their CD games. That would be the PC Engine. Mm-hmm. And the 3DO, not exactly stellar international successes. You know what I mean?
Right.
Oh, and the Neo Geo CD. So, I mean, these systems went, okay, we are going to be popular systems, and we want to stagger when our releases come out in different regions.
Right.
How do we do that? And the answer was to put in software on the discs. That the machine would have to read this program to go, okay, this disk is acceptable.
Right.
Even though the data, you know, the processors were pretty much the same. The data was the same. You know, it wasn't like it was Japanese data. You know, it's ones and zeros.
Right.
You know.
They're Madus and Ichis.
Exactly.
Incompatible,
yeah. All their ones and zeros come through in this weird Asian font. Okay. But I mean it wouldn't have been any problem for them to allow it to go region free. But they decided to.
That I think that's the point of the entire thing is that, you know, if it's software or if it's these physical impediments or chips or whatever, these companies had to make an effort. To do the region locking. It's not inherent in software or hardware. It's deliberate marketing decisions.
And why do they do this? Okay, I guess the first one is legal.
Okay.
Some of the games don't have their properties licensed to go to any country. Do you know what I mean?
Sure.
When they finally localize a Japanese game, sometimes they change a lot of the music.
Right.
Some of it they think, this game would be a lot better if we put in some songs from High School Musical rather than, you know, Japanese pop. Or, you know, I exaggerate. Maybe I don't exaggerate. I don't know. But, like, Dance Dance Revolution is a good example.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Putting in, like, American pop songs to try to, you know, make it more sellable. But another reason they do this with a lot of things is because the music isn't licensed for international distribution. The companies pay a license to have that come out in Japan. The same can be said for some movies or things like that. After the rights expire to some songs, they kind of replace the music when they release it on home video.
Yeah.
That's one of the reasons. That is apparently the reason Earthbound can never come out on the virtual console.
Because they don't feel like paying the licensing for it?
Well, apparently they didn't ask permission for a lot of the... Like, they copy music and things from various things. And like Nintendo of America was the legal issue was a little more lax when it came out, but now it would be a problem.
Right.
Apparently. I mean, that's, I don't know if that's true or not, but that's the excuse I've heard over on the Earthbound forums. Yes, I'm one of those people who is trying to get Earthbound. But another one is staggered releases. They want the game to be released in one region first, and then another region, you know, so they can focus their advertising and things like that, especially really big games. They don't want people to buy Japanese games because as much as that helps the Japanese people, these American companies for third-party games and stuff like that paid licenses. Take the Japanese version of Gekten Saiban, the Phoenix Wright Ace Attorney. It has full English built into the cartridge, the Japanese version.
Okay.
But they stopped doing that after Game 3.
Oh.
Probably because, well, either they were lazy, that's a possibility.
No, I don't think so.
Or just because they realized that a lot of people were importing these games.
Right, right.
Because they were out in Japan long before they were out in America. That would be an issue for Capcom, you know what I mean?
Mm-mm.
Not for Capcom, a company, but for the U.S. branch of Capcom.
Right. And then there's all the distributors, right? Exactly. The brick-and-mortar stores.
Because for Capcom, they don't care. I mean, Capcom, the company, doesn't care because they're getting money either way as long as people are buying it legally.
Right.
Same with Nintendo for those things. But the different divisions, like Capcom USA, or what makes it harder is when a game gets put to... Like, Sony developed the game Demon's Souls, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, like, in America, it was distributed by... Am I right? Atlas? Okay, I believe so.
If only Chris Ware were here, he seemed to...
Sony didn't distribute it itself. And so if that game was region-free, Atlas would have a less valuable license. So that's the reason for region locks. But I'm of the opinion that I don't like them.
Too. When the DSi software went region locked, that was... end of an era, because up until that point, all the Game Boys, all the DSs, DS Lite, everything was region free, so you could import stuff like Owen Dunn.
Yep. I think that's something we glossed over, but portable systems have always been region free until the DSi.
Yep.
I guess it could be said that the PC Engine Pocket system was not, you know, the Turbo Express was not region free, but that's just because it was the same hardware as the console, but with a little TV on it, you know.
Mm.
So, if you're wondering, well, the Dreamcast, you didn't talk about Dreamcast. Listen to our Dreamcast episode. We talk about the lockout there.
Yeah, and also there's attached to that, I believe, is a video of the 10-year anniversary of Dreamcast where you see me actually putting a boot disc in to play Shenmue 2 and a few other games, Samba 2000.
You're really plugging everything
to me. There's so many things to plug. So how about we just attach the podcast to our show notes and just hope they find the video that way?
Good idea.
Otherwise, it's just going to be just full of self-aggrandizing crap.
I know. Going to crash anybody's flash player anyway. And for a lot of people, import gaming was portable gaming, because I don't know, that's where a lot of people started, because you don't need to modify anything. And also portable games had really kind of crappy screen resolutions,
right?
You know, in the early days,
right?
So they couldn't really put mini kanji in these games.
Mm.
So even role-playing games and stuff like that used the simplified Japanese alphabet. I don't know how familiar people are with Japanese, but kanji are the ones that look like, I don't know, a million pickup sticks dropped on the ground, kind of randomly rearranged.
Right.
They're the Chinese characters. Whereas the katakana look kind of like letters, I guess. I mean, they're simple. They're made of a couple of lines.
And katakana generally more angular than hiragana, but
exactly.
I think, could the Game Boys do hiragana? I'm not sure. I don't recall. Yeah, okay.
It could do hiragana and katakana quite well. And so most of the games, like Pokemon games, also made for a young audience who may not know all the kanji. You're still studying kanji up till high school. Can you imagine that?
Well, it's 2,000 characters you have to read to be able to read a newspaper, I think, isn't it?
I know. Yes, yeah. Something like that. Can you imagine if our language, like we had our alphabet, but there were like 3,000 letters, you know, and you had to devote a weekend to singing the alphabet song.
Right.
But no, it's not like that. But like all of the kanji characters can be expressed by this simplified alphabet.
Mm.
And it makes it a little hard, actually, once you know kanji to read it, because it's hard to know where one word ends and another word starts.
Right.
I remember I could play through parts of like early Dragon Quest games or like bits of Pokemon Green, which I'm like, whoa, Pokemon Green wasn't released in America. Although I think it really just was Pokemon Blue. You know, actually, right. That import of Pokemon Green is the only substantial time I've ever spent with a Pokemon game.
Really? But I never really
played Pokemon. I was just intrigued by Japanese at the time. But...
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, and by substantial, I mean like a couple of hours.
Oh.
Sorry. That's another episode about my Pokemon deficiency. I really have no right to call myself a huge Nintendo fan, as I've kind of glossed over that entire era. Anyway,
but you did do a song about the Pokemon, you know.
I did. Well, that'll come up in some episode when we don't have time to record one. Yeah. So anyway, but that was the thing. Portable systems were a great way to play import games. And even now, and everybody thought, like, when they went to a kind of a disc-based format with a PSP, that would end.
Right.
But it didn't. PSP, the games are completely region-free. The UMD movies are region-locked due to rights issues. But the games themselves are totally region-free.
That's fascinating. I'm surprised I would have made that decision.
Well, I don't know. I gotta give hats off to Sony on this. The PlayStation 3 is region-free as well.
So it's the only one of this generation.
It's the only one that's fully region-free of this generation. The Wii is not.
Amazing.
The Xbox 360 is kinda,
huh?
They left it up to the developers on this one.
Yeah, well, that's interesting.
So take a game like Blue Dragon or Lost Odyssey, totally region-free across all regions.
Wow.
But other games, like ones that you'd think. But like I think I'm not sure. There's a nice list online. Play Asia sponsors a list, and there's a couple other ones you can check. I'd say about 30% are totally region free, and some of them are like it'll work in this region, but not this region, but it will work in this. You know.
Well, really, the 360 is region locked because nobody in Japan owns one.
Yeah. Pretty much. The Xbox was totally region locked.
Oh, interesting. Okay, so that should reverse their position. That's very interesting.
Yeah, well, Microsoft went, we don't care, because we make licensing fee regardless of who buys it.
Right,
yep. So third parties, if you want to lock it, do it. If you don't.
You know, and here I thought we were going to just be like down in the dumps and be like, everything's region locked now, even the handhelds, there's no hope for the future. And here we are, there are actual, you know, different decisions being made, some that contradict earlier decisions, which is...
But we'll see. Yeah. We'll see how that goes, though. Like, I don't have any faith in Sony doing that in the future, though, just because...
Really?
I mean, they were able to put they did have region locks on the Blu-rays and of course on the DVDs and still the PlayStation 2 games on the system. But I don't know, like when they removed the ability to install Linux and stuff, when the PlayStation 3 launched, it was really open. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It had all those, different expansion ports. But as they went on, they're kind of like, maybe that wasn't a good idea. Maybe we're going to tighten this a little bit. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see. I'm looking at the Vita too to see if that is a region locked system.
Right.
Or not. But considering
the
that they're but like the PSP Go is region locked.
Oh, is it? Because that's UMD list, right? So.
Yep. Well, yeah. It's not region locked by the hardware itself. Like if you buy a Japanese one, it'll work in America, but it's region locked by what PlayStation Network store you're signed into.
Yeah. Same with like Wii downloadable games and DSi store games. Yeah.
Theoretically, if you made two accounts, something you can't do on the Wii, but right. If you made two accounts, you should be able to download games from both regions.
That was a way around Beautiful Katamari on the 360.
Yep.
Was that they were just unlock codes for those games. And what you could do is, like, Korea had them when the U.S. didn't or something, so you could make a Korean live account.
Crazy.
I don't think it had to be a gold account, did it? Just a silver account?
No, I think it was the silver was fine.
Yeah, so that was a way to unlock them for your 360, which is it's insane. That's why I hate unlock codes for content that's on a disc. That's an entirely different topic as well.
Yep. Anyway, so I don't know. I think I kind of like the laissez-faire approach that Xbox is doing.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Sure.
I mean, I prefer no region locks whatsoever.
Naturally.
But from a company's perspective, you know. Like these small companies,
sure,
you know, who may not be releasing in all region, it's a win-win, you know.
Interestingly enough, our Famicom Dojo Season 1 DVD is not region locked. It is a region-free disc, so anyone in any part of the world can buy it. Like just today, someone from Brazil bought a copy, and they will be able to play it with no problem.
Hats off, Brazilian person who bought it today.
So, I mean, we have a promo code for that if you want to pick up your own copy, which is a significant discount off the regularly advertised price. Figured I'd get that in there. We're talking about DVDs and region-free gaming, which includes the episode 4, the cartridges and pins that we were talking about.
Cool. All right. Wow, that was quite a plug. But okay, in that case, I'm going to plug something too.
Okay,
I am going to plug an episode of Rebel in Japan I did before the Wii was even released. Ooh. This is really old, and it was basically my spoken open letter to Nintendo pleading with them to make the Wii region free. And it worked. The Wii was but the thing is, there was confusion because in one interview, Cammy had said, Cammy is the, is was it Cammy? I don't remember. Dunway? I don't know. Maybe it wasn't her. Maybe this is pre-her. But someone had said in an interview that it would be region-free, and there was much rejoicing. I was really, really happy about this. And then like 2 days later, they went, that person didn't know what they were talking about.
Well, it's interesting to me, too, is that you could basically, like, just every time you say Revolution, because that's when it's the code name. Every time you say Revolution, we could just replace it with Wii U, and the exact same arguments apply.
I know. But anyway, Nintendo, if you're listening to this, because I'm sure you're avid listeners to this program, Wii U, make it region-free, and I'm there day one. So
that's pretty much how I ended that Rebel in Japan segment.
Who am I kidding? I'll be there day one anyway. But you don't need to know that, okay? But I mean, making a system region free is a big plus for me,
definitely.
And making a system not region free is a big minus for me. I will confess, I do not own a 3DS.
Well, neither do I. But that's more for the price than the lack of games or the lack of features or
angry letters. Okay. No, 3DS is not as compelling to me as the original DS was, but there's enough stuff where I could see myself having one,
right?
And but the price is quite high. But yeah, if that price allowed me to have a region-free system, you know what I mean?
Sure.
If that $250 afforded me a region-free system, I can see myself doing it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I can see myself buying that. That's worth it to me. But since I want to play Japanese games, because I love the quirky Japanese games, but I also want to play my RPGs in English so I don't have to have my dictionary handy.
Right.
Or ask my wife, hey, what does this mean? You know? Which doesn't make it fun for anybody. I will need to buy two systems, and $500 to play 3DS is not. That doesn't do it. That doesn't do it for me. Of course, I'm in the minority. You know, for a lot of people, that's not an issue.
Well, you already bought two Wiis. Why wouldn't you buy two 3DSs at the same price when they launched?
I did buy two Wiis, and look at how that bit me in the butt. You know, the couple games that I really, really want to play right now, I need a third one to buy, and that brings us back to Operation Rainfall.
Yes.
If only the goal was that the game needed to be translated, there would be no need for Operation Rainfall. Because all three of these games have been translated into English and will be released in Europe. The region coding is what's holding everybody up. Yes, you can modify your Wii system to play European games. But the legality is a gray area. But Nintendo clearly doesn't want you to do it. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I mean, we shouldn't do everything Nintendo, you know, if Nintendo is jumping off a bridge, would you? But by doing it, you're going to have to keep modifying it because every time new software comes out, Nintendo's going to once again make it so you have, and you got to wait for the modding community to come up with something else. You know, I hate it. I hate the chase. You know what I mean?
Sure. So I guess all we can do is petition Nintendo and other companies to release the games that we want to play. Xenoblade campaign for mail-in already finished this week. Next one's for Last Story, July 18th to 20th, and the next one is July 25th to 27th for Pandora's Tower. This is 2011, by the way, for those listening in the future.
And then, of course, there's my elegant solution to region coding. Have region coding, that's fine. Have region coding, that's fine. But when you release this piece of software in one region, have all languages on it.
Sure.
Because then if I'm interested primarily in games that Japanese companies are doing, I'll just buy a Japanese system. and then, you know, I can play the game. I mean, this system, this solution's never going to work. It costs money to localize things.
Sure.
You know, but, I mean, when you do find a game like that, Knights for the Knights game for Wii has English in it, both voices and text, in the Japanese copy.
Right.
Things like that. When I find something like that, I'm so happy. I wasn't even going to buy that game, but but when I found that out, I bought it, you know, just to kind of support that they do that.
Mm-hmm.
SNK fighting games, the Japanese versions, all like on Sega Saturn, have the English all built in.
Right.
Things like that. I love finding that. Those are little hidden treasures for me. Most of the Tecmo games, like Ninja Gaiden, Gaiden.
I think it's actually Gaiden, but whatever.
Gaiden, whatever. The Japanese one for Xbox has the has all the English built in, both voices and text.
Right. Nice.
Same with the Dead or Alive Beach Volleyball series.
Oh boy.
Oh, I've said too much. Okay. Anyway, if you want to listen to my failed attempt at convincing Nintendo to go region free with the Wii, go to our main site, famicomdojo.tv, and in the show notes there's a link where you can listen to that,
hopefully above all the other self-promoting plugs that we have already talked about.
Wow. So but we're looking forward to your comments. We want to know what you think about this. I think we've tried to present both sides. For the gamers, it's in our interest to not have things be region locked, but for the companies, it definitely makes financial sense for them to do it. Is there a middle ground? We'd love to hear what you think of this.
Sure, absolutely. So please leave a comment on famicomdojo.tv or anywhere you see it syndicated. Or you can also leave comments on our iTunes storefront, which is sadly underutilized. So I would highly recommend.
Try not to leave too many comments there, like asking questions, though, because that doesn't help anyone. Please just write, "This is the best show I've ever heard." Please continue making more of it. Five stars. That's the type of comment I'll suggest.
That is what we would love to see. So.
But anyway, I will catch all of you next week. Same time, same wherever you're downloading this from.
Later.
Famicom Dojo.
Let me think. Someone's going to come email us or send us a message. You'd be like, "Where's Sean Orange?"
Oh, we should probably cut that.
Cut that
anyway.
Yeah.